Hello all, this is our NASH telecast with Diane Miller, JD. She's the Director of Law and Public Policy for the National Health Freedom Action and National Health Freedom Coalition. And she's got quite an agenda tonight that we're going to be going through. So with that, Diane, are you ready?
Yes, I am. Should I just begin?
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. It's good to be here. So most of you are going to be homeopaths on this call, I'm guessing. So it's really wonderful for me because I just took a 200 Arnica because I just got out of the dentist. You all are so important, and I'm happy to serve you in making sure that you can practice. I guess there were four areas that I thought we could cover tonight. And if you have other ideas, you're welcome to tell me. My ideas were, what are your understandings of your rights right now? Number two is state and federal laws having to do with homeopathy and remedies. Number three are states that have safe harbor laws. Number four is states that have licensing laws. And then another suggestion was, how can people change the law? What's that process like? And this could be an all-day seminar, so we're just going to buzz through some of these things so that you can have an overview. And I think that it'd be great if you have questions, if you want to ask them at the end of each topic area, or if you think it's really important right in the middle, go ahead and ask, because I'm really fine with interactive anything. So let's begin. The first thing that I think is really important is for me to understand what your understanding of your rights are, because when somebody calls me and says, you know, I'm being investigated because I myself as practicing medicine or practicing naturopathy or something.
Could everyone mute their phone by pressing *6 right now? We have some background noise.
There we go. So when people get investigated for practicing, sometimes they're being investigated because somebody's telling them they were practicing medicine, or they were practicing naturopathy, or they were under consumer protection fraud statute. So does anyone on the call want to comment on what their understanding is of their right to practice right now? What are your thoughts or concerns about? Do you think you can practice? And everybody's been put on mute, so I'm not.
You can take yourself off mute by pressing *6 again if you want to ask a question.
Okay, so if you want to jump in, just jump in. Otherwise, I'm going to keep going. So my experience has been that I've talked to people that says, there are no laws prohibiting me from practicing, and I'm just going to practice. And other people say to me, I can't practice. It's against the law to practice. And other people say, I can practice if I give out my disclaimers, and I've written up disclaimers, and it says I'm not practicing medicine, and I've got all kinds of waivers. They all sign it, and therefore I'm okay. I've had people tell me, I can't make or sell remedies if I'm not a pharmacist. People have said remedies are just like supplements. I can do whatever I want with them. And some people say, all remedies are legal to give out by anybody. So in homeopathy, there's a lot of confusion and also not clarity about all of these things. And that's because you're not in the conventional mode of regulatory laws. And that's a good thing, but people don't know where they really are at with the laws. So I thought maybe I could help just teach overview concepts so that you could see where you're situated legally.
Some of us are even scared of even saying the word practice. We have to say consultation.
That's another thing I've heard. If I just educate and I'm really not practicing, or if I just call it something else, I'm really not practicing. So let's talk about that. So in every state, well, there's state and there's federal laws. And states have the power to regulate professions because state governments are there to keep the people of the state safe. They're not there to deal with laws regarding making sure our country is nationally safe from nuclear war or anything. They're there to keep the citizens of that state safe, and they have autonomy over the people of their state and jurisdiction, I mean. So states are the ones that regulate occupations to keep their citizens safe. And the federal government regulates interstate commerce between states. So it has to do with, if you have a product and you're selling it across state lines, then you got to follow the federal guidelines for that product. And so they have very different functions in the world of homeopathy. And as the years go by, the federal government laws sometimes are getting more dominant in the states. Like a federal law will pass and then a state will go, I like that law, I think I'll adopt that law in my state. So let's start with state laws. And if you're in the United States, that's what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about laws outside of our country. So if you're in a state or a commonwealth and they have occupational laws, there's two kinds of occupational laws. One is to protect the practice of people, and one is to protect the title of what they use to practice. And so there's various levels of doing that. And first thing you should know when you're practicing is, what is the law for your state? And if you have practice in multiple states, you have to have, what is the law in multiple states? And if you're doing teleconferencing, you have to have understanding of the laws for telemedicine or telehealthcare services across state lines. And so those are particular areas of law that you should know as a practitioner when you're providing services. So looking up the occupational laws. And then the second thing is the state laws for pharmacy and drugs and supplements. So look up the state laws. And when I think about people figuring out what the laws are in the states that they're practicing, I encourage people that are providing services to people to have a relationship with a lawyer that they like and have that lawyer lay out the laws and have an hour or two consultation with a lawyer, get a relationship going with a lawyer so that you know what your risk is in your practice. If it's against the law to practice in that state and you still want to practice anyway, then have that lawyer tell you what should I do? There's not very many lawyers that will recommend that you practice in a state where it's against the law. But they will tell you some risk assessments to do, given that it's illegal. They might tell you to move. But that's the first thing, is to know the laws in your state on substances and the distribution of substances and on practice laws. Then secondly, in the federal issues, understand what laws there are for drugs, supplements, and over-the-counter drugs and everything. And hopefully that attorney will be able to advise you about those. So let me just go back now to occupational laws. Most states have laws that license healthcare professions, or they register them, or they certify them. And certification, registration, and licensing are different levels of government power. The most power a government can have over you is licensing. The second one, depending on the state, is registration, and the third one is certification. Some states don't do that second registration. It follows that it's either licensing, certification, and permit. And the permit is called I Register My Name. So depends on the state. All of them have licensing, and some of them have registration or certification or both. If you are in a state where there's licensed professions, all of those licensed professions have definitions of scope of practice. And in a licensing statute, there's always a criminal charge for people who are not licensed. So first you have to have a special education, and you have to use special titles, and you have a licensing act that says, and no one else can do this. But then in licensing act, there's a list of exemptions. Oh, we really don't mean, you know, if you're a licensed medical doctor, the exemption list will say, well, we really don't mean people to take care of people on an emergency basis, or a family member giving out home remedies. So the licensing statutes have these components. They have the definition of what the practice is, whether it's medicine, nursing, chiropractic, osteopathy. They have what the educational requirements are, ways to take your license away, and then they have this criminal charge for the unlicensed practice. Some of them are misdemeanors, some of them are felonies, depending on the state. And then there's a list of exemptions. So that's the most regulation. Then there's another tier if you're not licensed, but you're maybe a registered profession or a certified profession, depending on the state. You would have the same educational requirements, but there would not be a criminal charge for practicing. There would just be a criminal charge for using a title that is exclusive to that registered person group. So certification and registration both generally are title protection acts. They require you to have a particular kind of an education. Sometimes they're voluntary, but they're always protecting a title that is hooked to a particular kind of education. They have criminal charges for use of that title. And then there's exemptions to that also. And usually those exemptions in title protection are for people who already are licensed people. So the reason that it's important to know about the occupational licensing laws are because in every...
Excuse me, Diane. We have some background noise. If you could all make sure your phone is muted with star 6.
All right. Cool. Yeah, so these occupational laws, they become important to homeopaths because if you go into a state code, you'll see that the practice of medicine, the definition, covers all of healing in most states. It's like anything you do to prevent, cure, treat in any manner, or by any means or mentalities, any disease, wound, fracture, deformity, or defect. It's the practice of medicine. And anybody who does that without a medical license, and it's if you're not on the exemption list, is criminal behavior. This same kind of law is being, for example, the homeopath that got shut down and investigated in Hawaii was investigated under a naturopathic physician licensing law where it said you could not practice naturopathic medicine because homeopathy was part of what naturopathic doctors do. And there was no exemption for homeopaths. And in the state of Washington, homeopath was charged with the practice of naturopathic medicine. That's because the definition of naturopathic medicine included all of natural healing, including homeopathy. And so you could either be shut down under the definition of practice of medicine, definition of practice of naturopathy, definition of acupuncture, if it is a licensing statute that can conceivably include homeopathy. And it doesn't have to have the word homeopathy. It could just be, you know, practice of medicine is anything you do to prevent, cure, treat, or ameliorate any disease, wound, fracture, deformity, or defect. And in Kansas, the law even says whether that illness is imaginary or not. So one of the things that I began working with is how to figure out a way to get an exemption from the practice of medicine, because the practice of medicine was so broad it would cover herbalists and traditional naturopaths and homeopaths and mothers with chicken soup. So I was working in Minnesota in a case of a farmer who got shut down for practicing medicine, giving colostrum, and I got very interested in changing that law. So getting an exemption to that or knowing in your state what your laws are is important. Some people think, well, nobody's getting shut down in our state, so let's just practice. Everybody knows I'm not practicing medicine. I don't have a white coat. I don't use the word doctor. I don't do surgery. I'm not practicing medicine. But when you're in front of a jury and they're handed the definition of the practice of medicine and they say, you have to uphold the law. Was this person doing these healing things? That's what happens in a courtroom. So it's important to know what those definitions are. Homeopathy is unusual in the natural health, holistic, unlicensed practitioner realm because homeopathic remedies are considered drugs. When they were first defined, when drug was first defined in the federal law about products, and products going across state lines and what is a drug, the definition of drug is the same as the definition of the practice of medicine. It's anything you use to help cure, treat, or ameliorate any disease, wound, fracture. It's the same language. And then and they added a couple paragraphs to the federal drug law. There's like five paragraphs of what a drug is, and one of them is that it's in substances in the homeopathic pharmacopoeia. And that was done because there was a senator at the time that was a homeopathic medical doctor. So you ended up in the drug world instead of the supplement world. We passed the Dietary Supplement Act, and all of the amino acids, the herbs, minerals, those are all dietary supplements, and they're considered food. They're regulated as food. But homeopathic remedies are regulated as drugs. So now you have an unlicensed person giving out a drug, which sets up a whole different scenario. And, you know, the federal government, when they're deciding what remedies are prescription remedies as opposed to over-the-counter remedies only, they set up a special process for homeopathic regulation, and it's not like the industrialized drug regulation. It has to do with provings and getting monograms and things. So the regulations for getting a homeopathic drug into the regulatory framework is very different than an investigational new drug or an industrial drug. So, but we have found by going over the list of prescription drugs and over-the-counter drugs for remedies that they consider the lower dose remedies more dangerous than the higher dose remedies because there's less substance in them. So you'll say maybe a 1x opium would be, you know, a prescription-only drug, and a 1m opium would be not regulated in terms of over-the-counter and prescription. So that whole understanding of the science of homeopathy is inverted, and probably to your benefit on some level, but they'll figure that out eventually as science progresses. So it's important, so going back to state law, if you decided that you were going to have an exemption under state law, you would want that exemption to include an exemption for giving out drugs, because usually they don't let anybody give out drugs, so you could say except for over-the-counter homeopathic remedies or something like that. And they would be fine with it because they think they're not dangerous. So just making sure that you always interface your state and your federal issues together when you're looking for a freedom statute. So let's see, federal prescription drug over-the-counter product laws. Okay. Are there questions so far?
So if you have a question, press *6 to unmute your phone.
Okay.
I'm in a state where, as far as I've been able to find out, there is no regulation for or against anything. I went to a lawyer and asked if I could practice, and he went through whatever he had to go through and came back and said, no, as long as you don't say you're a doctor and you don't interfere with anybody's medications, you know, that shouldn't be a problem. But I don't know, after what you've just said, it sounds like that was a little too easy.
Yeah, I think many attorneys, I hate to say this, but many attorneys, when they're doing their research, they'll look for the word homeopathy in the law and they won't find it. And they go, oh, well, no big deal. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know health freedom laws, so they're not looking at the definition of the practice of medicine or the definition of the practice of anything, because it doesn't mention the term homeopathy. And so that can be a downer. And so I have talked to some attorneys where people have been investigated, and I kind of walk them through what to look for. And that's sad, but that is true, because it very rarely happens that a homeopath gets prosecuted. I mean, it would be the number of times that has happened in my world is I've only known two or three. So it's not like it happens all the time. But then a lot of people practice with their heads down. So
yes, that's what I do.
Yeah, and that shouldn't be necessary. You know, my hope is that people don't ever have to keep their heads down, and they can put their names in Yellow Pages and have websites and be free to practice and have a robust community like we do in Minnesota. And I think that the real truth about this in terms of who can practice and who can't is if you go and try and change that law and get an exemption, you know, all havoc is wreaked at the Capitol, because no way, you can't practice, you can't be talking to sick people, you can't, what do you think, you know? So the real attitude comes out when you try to change this law. And the reality of the culture where you have to think about keeping your head down, that's sad. That should not be. And so hopefully that'll change. But anyway, yes, that's a good example, and sad example, of even an attorney saying, hey, there's no problem here. And legislators will tell you that too. There's no problem. In fact, one time a senator in one state said, there's no problem unless you can prove to me that there's a problem, I'm not going to take this bill. And he did an informal request to the Attorney General's office to ask the Attorney General if it was really illegal to practice homeopathy, and the Attorney General came back and said yes. It was not a formal Attorney General opinion. It was just a preference one for a senator. And then he took the bill forward. So one of the things that I want to just talk first, I'm going to invert these two last things. States that have licensing laws. There are three states that have licensing laws for homeopaths, and you have to be a medical doctor in order to practice in those states. So Connecticut, Arizona, and Nevada. And in those states, for example, in Nevada, they are the unlicensed homeopaths, or the professional homeopaths that are not medical doctors, have to practice under the supervision of a medical doctor. And in some of these states, they've had such regulatory laws as you have to be within 15 feet of a doctor, or you have to be within, you know, the hallway, whatever. They've been very hesitant to allow homeopaths to practice without a medical doctor around. And now Nevada has a tier system that they passed where the medical board certifies the homeopaths to practice under the supervision of a doctor, kind of like a physician's assistant. So there are three states, and in those two of those states, Arizona and Nevada, there have been attempts to get exemptions for unlicensed homeopaths to practice without supervision. Big Rosenberg and his friends in Arizona worked hard to get an exemption into the Arizona statute. When he was working on that, they were working on that. It was a criminal charge to use the term homeopath without being a medical doctor. So he got an exemption passed in Arizona saying that people could practice, I don't have it in front of me, but something like if you're making Hahnemann dilutions according to the spirituality of Hahnemann, then you could practice, but you couldn't use the word homeopathy, and you could not use the word you could not use the word homeopathy or homeopath. Then when Arizona went forward to try and get licensure of homeopaths that were not medical doctors, that statute was introduced, and it was not allowing the Hahnemann people to use the term homeopath. So we encouraged them to put in their statute an amendment to free up that criminal charge of the term homeopath. So it gets complicated because you've got laws that are already on the books for homeopathy, and you've got people that want to be licensed homeopaths that aren't medical doctors, and they want to be under the government's jurisdiction and have particular kind of education mandates. And then you've got other homeopaths that want to practice in the public domain as long as they're not hurting anybody and calling themselves a homeopath. So you've got these different views about how to regulate. And in Nevada, just this past year, we worked hard to get an exemption to the Medical Practice Act. And the legislators wanted to put a list of things that would be included in the exemption, like traditional naturopathy and herbalism and all that stuff. But because they had the criminal charges for homeopathy on their books, they would not put homeopathy on that health freedom list in Nevada because they already had three-tiered certification for homeopaths. And so homeopaths did not get the same privilege in Nevada on the health freedom bill as the herbalist and everyone else. So
yeah, that's correct. My name is Aaron. I live in Nevada, and I just saw that. It's under Section 10, it says natural substance means homeopathic, botanical, nutritional, other supplement that does not require a prescription. This is all under the naturopathic umbrella also. And we've also got that medical licensing board, which we can practice homeopathy with, like you said, underneath a doctor's rule. And most of them are not homeopaths.
Diane, I have a question. If you live in I live in a state that doesn't have a law one way or the other, and if one was wanting to start the process, this is going to be a really simplistic question, is there a preference to be either certified or registered in accordance with the state?
Okay,
I mean, if you're starting from zero.
Two things. You are not in a state where there's no law. There is no state where there is no law. You have the Medical Practice Act.
Yep. I mean, in terms of alternative therapies or homeopathy.
Yeah. So you're in a state where it's criminal to practice freely. If you're in a state where there's a Medical Practice Act with no exemption for homeopathy. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. So my preference, and I have to say this is my preference, is to not register and not license a homeopath, because for the most broad breadth of freedom you can get to expand your education and to expand what you do with people is to be able to practice freely as a professional homeopath. So I have worked hard to pass safe harbor laws, and that's an exemption to all the practice acts. Like New Mexico, it's not just an exemption to the Medical Practice Act, it's an exemption to all the practice acts, so that you could not be charged with the practice of anything without a license as long as you were avoiding a list of prohibited conduct and giving out a disclosure saying you are not licensed under these other statutes. So when a person comes to me and says, you know, I'm worried that it's not legal here, nothing's really going on in my state, what should I do? I say, pass a safe harbor bill, because it's a way to get out from under the jurisdiction of the government so that you can practice and get the kind of education that you want from as many sources as you want. Now, some people think that they want to have government license or register homeopaths so that there's a certain level of education that is required by law for a homeopath to have in order to call himself the homeopath. I don't support that concept, because I think the beauty of homeopathy is that it is evolving as the culture is spiritually evolving. So I hope that the government doesn't ever put homeopathy in a box. But I like the safe harbor requirement of disclosure, because I think it's important for consumers to know, just like they are with an herbalist. Am I with an herbalist that's been practicing for 30 years and part of the American Herbalist Guild, or am I, you know, a homeopath that's studied in 5 countries and 40 years and written 5 books, or am I a homeopath that went to a weekend course in homeopathy? So the disclosure to the consumer, so that the consumer can choose the type of homeopath they want, is really extremely important, in my opinion, in the safe harbor bill.
Could you tell us, what is a safe harbor bill?
So a safe harbor bill is when you design an exemption to the licensing occupational acts that are already on the books in your state. And you can draft it any way you want, but the two main elements that I recommend are that you say, I am exempt from the criminal charges of practicing medicine and all these other practices as long as I avoid this particular list of prohibited acts, which is in most states, there's 10 states now that have these on some form or other. Can't do surgery, puncture the skin, give out prescription drugs, do chiropractic adjustments, cause an imminent risk of serious harm to a person. So there's a list of prohibited acts. And then there's a mandatory disclosure that you have to give to all your clients, saying what your name, your business address, your background, where you got your education, and what is the service you're providing, what's the theory about the service that you're providing. And this Safe Harbor Act then is, like for in Minnesota, the first one that I was involved passing, the prohibited acts list, it was so controversial at the legislature because they had never even thought of letting an unlicensed person that wasn't a doctor or a nurse be near a sick person and give them recommendations. So that was a big deal. So as it went through the legislature, there are, in the Minnesota bill, 28 paragraphs of prohibited conduct. And there is a whole 18 paragraph of disclosures that you have to give. But when we passed that, and it passed as complementary and alternative health care bill, the next third state was California. And California is very short. John Melichuk can tell you all about the California bill, where it's the short version, the one that we actually started when we started in Minnesota. But that's so that the California version is a shorter version, and it just says you can't puncture the skin, you know, you can't tell people to go off of their medications, that it's short. It provides a exemption so that you would not be considered a criminal if you were ever investigated. It doesn't require you to go to a particular school like a licensing or a Title Act would. It doesn't have a board that's overseeing the standard of care, it literally is taking you out of the jurisdiction of the government as long as you stay within the safe harbor box. If you're outside of the box and you do something that's outside of the prohibited acts or don't give out your disclosure, you're back to where you started. You're not protected, and therefore you could be charged with practicing medicine without a license or practicing naturopathy without a license. So the safe harbor is a more complex exemption. Usually in occupational laws, they have the definition of what you do and where you have to get your education, and then they have the exemptions for the criminal charges of those people that they won't shut down. And they're short, like, oh, if I'm a Christian Scientist or spiritual healer, I am exempt. Or if I'm a home remedy. There's interesting exemptions historically in these laws. Massachusetts has an exemption for clairvoyance. And Iowa has an exemption for people who provide spring water from their farm to people for healing. And these exemptions are really reflect the culture of each state. Think people that they don't want to shut down. And Idaho is the longest, the oldest one, and it is using food, nutrients. It's right in their Medical Practice Act. So what we're trying to do is make a more complex one for everyone, for all herbalists, homeopaths, traditional naturopaths, Qigong people, people that are healing, and they're healing in the public domain, and we don't want them to keep their head down just because they're with sick people helping them get better. The politics of this comes into play when you have people that think that there's a certain level of educational requirements in order for you to, there should be anyway, that's what they're saying, there should be an educational component to a person who is helping someone get well from something. So that's where the political struggle comes in. So if you wanted to pass a safe harbor law or any other kind of law, we have calls in our organization. We help people pass laws. And so if somebody calls us, we say, well, do you have a group together? We'd be happy to talk to you by conference call. We research the laws of that state so that we kind of help them know what they need. Then we tell them to go find an attorney in their state and kind of confirm what we have found. And then we try and draft a law for them that would reflect a safe harbor that might reflect some of their concerns. And then we, oftentimes we've even helped people, groups set up their nonprofit organizations. We're on weekly calls with them. We help them figure out who a lobbyist would be if they want to hire a lobbyist. We help them talk to legislators. We help them understand the political process of what do I do first, where do I take the bill, how do I find a sponsor, how do I get the bill drafted in the revisor's office, how does the bill get introduced, what's the legislative process. If the bill goes to a hearing, we've testified in states. So the process of getting a bill passed is a whole nother decision. So first of all, it's important that you kind of know, are you comfortable not having a law in your state, or would you like a law, some protection, and then what kind of a law do you want, what would that look like? Those are some of the concerns about that.
I have a question.
Yeah.
How do we find out specifically what type of law, since you you mentioned that it would be a perhaps if we had safe harbor. I live in Texas. I have no clue. Where would I find that if it was not listed with the medical section of the law?
Texas has a really strong health freedom group there, and they have researched their laws, and they have worked to pass a safe harbor law. They got it to a hearing, but it did not pass out of that committee. They have history there for getting a safe harbor bill passed. And right now, that particular group that has worked on the safe harbor law about 2 years ago, they decided to think about, I believe, working on a constitutional amendment rather than a safe harbor statute. And I think that that's their focus right now. And we're not in touch with any other group in Texas that is working on a safe harbor law. But we would be happy to support any efforts like that. So what your question was, how would I find out? What could you repeat your question?
Yes, I'm sorry, I may be a little jumbled, but how would I find out where specifically homeopathy or naturopathy or any of those might be listed if it isn't next to, say, the medical section of the definition of doctor? Because I've read that.
Right. So it will not be listed in your statute. Homeopathy and naturopathy will not be listed. So you have to go to the definition of the practice of medicine. That's the first place to look. Did you do that?
Probably not. I'm just learning here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you go and find the definition of the practice of medicine, that's the occupational statute for medical doctors. And then you look at the definition and it'll probably say anything you do to help a person get well, just pretend, okay? Then keep on reading down that statute and it'll say it's a criminal charge if you practice without a license. Then you keep reading down that statute and it'll say who's exempt from that. It'll say this statute does not apply to the following people. And it might not apply to home remedies or the things or other licensed people like nurses. So when you first start out, it's important. I'd say the first statute to look for would be the practice of medicine statute, the Medical Practice Act. And then this other practice acts that might be of interest to you, licensing acts, are dietitian licensing acts, and that will say anything you say about nutrition, if you're not a licensed dietitian, would be a criminal act. And so you go through these different licensing acts and you see what is criminal to do. It won't mention homeopathy. It'll just tell you what is already on the books as criminal.
Can I interrupt for
okay.
just a moment?
Thank you.
It's actually not such a difficult thing to look up. I just did a very quick Google search. I typed in Texas Practice of Medicine Act, and you'll get your links right there.
Good. Right, and so if you can go further on the Google link, look for the exemptions, and you'll see what things Texas will not consider criminal.
Okay.
And so a safe harbor bill is inserting a section into that Medical Practice Act. It's inserting an exemption. And so the states that have exemptions for the Medical Practice Act now are Minnesota, Rhode Island, California, Louisiana, Nevada. Arizona has that small one. Colorado. Let's see, I have two more. Louisiana, New Mexico, and missing one, California. Yeah, I must be missing one more. Anyway, I don't but these states are, some of them, most of these states now in Oklahoma and Idaho, they have the word homeopathy in them, homeopath. Practicing homeopathy is no longer a criminal charge. And that's what you really want. You actually want that very clear, you know, to use as a defense if you were ever. And then also those safe harbor laws give you some guidance. Like they say, this is what you can't do, and this is what you have to provide to your client before you see them. So I think the hardest thing, just culturally, the hardest thing, first of all, is to put your arms around the concept that that the practice of medicine, originally the history of that in our country, pretty much those criminal laws pretty much made everybody go underground. And then one by one they came out and figured out a way to get above ground. So everybody was a criminal at first, and then the nurses came forward and the osteopaths came forward and said, yeah, but we want our own licensing statute, so we want to be exempt from your statute because we have our own licensing statute. And that was the solution. Let's get our own licensing statute. And nobody really thought about what the downside of getting your own license was. And you can talk to some acupuncturists. Some of the acupuncture community is sad that they went for licensing because they lost some of the traditional healing arts from the grandmothers of the Tibetan cultures and stuff. They have more of a conventional requirements now for acupuncture. So there wasn't the discussion about the downsides of licensing, of having the government tell you what kind of education you would need to, in fact, to do that practice, because everybody was going and getting their conventional training. So when holistic practices came forward, like, for example, the naturopathic physicians are licensed now in 15 or 17 states, but many of their statutes, when they first went to get licensing so that they could be protected from the Medical Practice Act for practicing medicine, they didn't take into consideration that a traditional naturopath who didn't want to be a medical naturopath might be shut down under their statute, or a homeopath might be shut down under their statute. And one of their arguments was, well, we don't want them to practice because they're not competent. But now, even like, for example, in Michigan just recently, a naturopathic physician statute was introduced, and it had exemptions in it for traditional naturopaths because they're aware that there are traditional naturopaths that don't really want to be under government mandate for their profession. So this is an evolving world of law, and the homeopaths were only licensed in 3 states. And in those 3 states, the professional homeopaths are suppressed. So I always recommend, if you're a homeopath, to be in a state with a safe harbor, or to get a safe harbor in your state, because it seems to provide a better fit. The other thing is that states don't have the right or the power to regulate professions that do not cause harm. The reason for getting licensing that a state can, like, States can't just go out and say everybody has to mow's lawn has to use this kind of lawnmower. Everybody that paints houses has to use yellow paint. I mean, they can't regulate occupations unless they pose a risk of harm without regulation. So the police power of the state is the reason why an occupation actually can be regulated by a state. And because these licensing statutes were going forward, it was almost like they were becoming popular, and they were like, I want to get insurance coverage, and I want our name to be out there, and I want to get, you know, part of, be in hospitals and medical clinics, and I want to be part of the medical community. That's not a reason to get an occupational licensing. So our argument when we get safe harbor bills is, this safe harbor bill is for occupations that do not pose a risk of harm to the public. And that's how we view homeopathy. It doesn't present a great enough risk to the public to mandate that the government should have police power, jail time, criminal charges, that kind of thing. So that is one reason, one good reason why a legislator would want to pass a safe harbor bill instead of a licensing act, because licensing acts prohibit people that are not licensed from practicing because they're considered dangerous.
I don't know how I got on that. That's a lot. This is a lot to digest, Diane.
Yeah. Well, it's so important because what path homeopathy takes for its future, because it is such a powerful healing modality, and to have it, you know, to have it as free as possible, but to also be part of the community of healers, how to be in that realm legally and have the profession itself grow and set its own standards. I mean, people think that the government is the only one that can create standards. You know, but that's just not true. The herbalist guilds for centuries and centuries have been part of the culture of the world. So rather than looking to government to validate or be part of a system, I look to having the profession itself support and nurture its own evolvingness. And then to get as much freedom from the government, but also as much protection from the government if you need protection. So, you know, for if there's particular things that you want to do, like say that you want to give out prescription drugs. You want to give out prescription remedies. You're not going to be like a safe harbor where safe harbor just gives out, you know, non-prescription things and supplements and food and nutrition. But say that a homeopath wanted to give out prescription drugs. Then you would have to use the law process. You'd have to design a law that would say, well, under what circumstances would we create a law to let homeopaths give out prescription drugs? And what would they be? You know what I mean? So you're trying to narrowly figure out solutions that don't jeopardize your long-term evolution.
Well, what confuses me is in your analogy about opium touched on it, is some homeopathic remedies are considered over-the-counter and some are not. And so what does that mean to a homeopath who's practicing, who's selling remedies?
It depends on what state they're in.
California, here.
Okay, so California has a health freedom statute.
Right.
So you have a safe harbor statute. And in your safe harbor statute, it has, I believe, that you cannot give out prescription drugs. You should
right.
Do you have it in front of you? So
well,
you can't. So you can't give out prescription drugs.
Okay.
If that's what your law says.
And that would be considered a prescription drug.
I don't know. I'm just saying.
Oh. Yes.
I'm just saying.
Yes, we can't do that. We can't prescribe.
If you can't, well, then you get the list of prescription drugs, the list of prescription homeopathic remedies drugs from either the pharmacy, regulators at the FDA for homeopathic remedies, or sometimes, like Boreon will give out a list of which ones are prescription and which ones aren't.
And they differ from pharmacy to pharmacy, I have to be honest here.
Can I interject there and give a little explanation of that? My name is Eric Foxman, and I'm on the board of the Homeopathic Pharmacopeia.
Great.
There are two different issues involved with the OTC versus RX for homeopathic products. One is a question that comes, or an aspect that comes from the pharmacopoeia, which is solely an aspect having to do with whether the substance can be considered safe for use, and the criteria that's used is the accidental ingestion by a very small child of the entire contents of a container. And that's a toxicological calculation, and that's why there are some substances that have, in very low attenuations, 1x, 2x, maybe 3x or 4x, that those are restricted to RX only, and in higher attenuations they can be sold OTC. That's one aspect, which is a safety aspect. There's an entirely different aspect, and that is, what is the indication that is on the label of the product? And that can vary from company to company. If the indication is something which is self-limiting and can be diagnosed by the consumer themselves, let's say a cough or a headache, then it can be sold OTC. However, if the indication that's on the label is one that requires medical monitoring, diagnosis or intervention, for example, cancer or diabetes or even asthma, those are all considered to be prescription-required indications. So my company, and by the way, I don't have a company, so this is totally hypothetical, my company could make a product that the HPUS says is safe for use on an OTC basis, and I could put onto it an indication which requires it to be sold RX. That would be a reason why you would see different companies potentially having the same homeopathic attenuation of the same medication, one of them selling it OTC and one of them selling it RX. Making it somewhat more complex, and I hate to say this, but it's true, there are companies that do not follow the law and illegally market RX-required products on an OTC basis. You need to decide as a practitioner whether or not you want to do business with a company that willingly or totally ignorantly ignores the law. Because if they're doing it with that, they may be doing it with other things, including not standardizing their processes so that you don't really know what's in the product. But that's a different conversation. However, I wanted to point out the difference between RX and OTC is a bit more complex than just getting a list. You need to understand what stands behind the list.
Mm. I'm really, really grateful for that explanation. I'm glad this is being taped.
Yes.
As I will take notes on that. Thank you so much.
And what happens, just while our... what happens if the remedy comes from another country?
So let's just go back here to the law.
Okay.
when you have a law and it says you can't give out a prescription drug and you're not sure if it's a prescription drug or not, then call someone like Eric. Did you say your name was?
Yes.
Yes, correct. Call someone like Eric and say, is this a prescription drug? But I'd go back to the law and say, no, let's see. There's a lot of remedies that I give out that are actually prescription only if you were looking at it carefully and legally and with the complexity on the bottle. So what would you do to create laws that would allow you to do as much as you could? So then you've got to put on your thinking cap and design a law that allows you and all of the homeopaths that have all kinds of levels of training to do what they can. So the first thing, the first tier has already been done. You have a health freedom law, you get to practice, and the legislator said, yeah, but they can't give out prescription drugs, right? They didn't understand the complexity of homeopathic remedies. We could have put in, accept homeopathic remedies of, you know, we could have made a sentence in there. So now if you wanted a sentence in there saying, just pretend the sentence would say, that you can give out all homeopathic remedies, you know, not prescription drugs. You could just say, accept homeopathic remedies, which can be given out by homeopaths. And you wanted to pass that into law so that you could give out over-the-counter and prescription remedies, then you would have to start then that process. You'd have to find a sponsor. You'd have to draft that language, that sentence. You'd have to figure out how to pass it. And that's most of my time is spent helping people pass those laws, getting them going, figuring out how to get a sponsor, getting it moving, and how to get support behind it. So homeopathy is in this discussion about what do we want sometimes. What do we want for the future? And there's a kind of a knee-jerk reaction. Let's do what everybody else did. Let's just go get licensing it's much more complicated than that. And I think Eric's explanation of remedies in itself is that's kind of what happens in the occupational law. It's more complicated than that. Mm. And so the safe harbor bills are the first step to getting you freed up. And there should be a safe harbor bill for homeopaths in every single state so that you don't have to worry about, you know, practicing. But the remedy issues and what you want to do and how you want to evolve into giving out things that whether you think they're, you know, cause imminent risk of harm or not, whether the government thinks they cause imminent risk of harm, that's a whole nother level of legislation that may be needed in the future. But in terms of your first level, if you had that conversation, say you took a safe harbor forward in a state that doesn't have a safe harbor, and you started talking about homeopathic remedies and over-the-counter drugs and the that'll slow a bill down very, very quickly. And then the whole broader umbrella bill would not pass. So the broader bills are trying to get passed, and then having that more sophisticated remedy legislation may be needed in the future depending on how you evolve. I don't know if, Eric, you have any comments to give about that.
No, I don't have any comments regarding legislative efforts other than to say that I think it would be a very, very, very difficult, hard sell to tell legislators that homeopaths should be allowed to prescribe, to dispense or give out prescription homeopathic drugs, because the legislator is going to ask, well, why is it labeled as being a prescription item? And as soon as the question of safety or the question of indication comes up, that's a really hard sell to say, well, I'm not a doctor, I'm a homeopath, but it requires medical monitoring or intervention. I think that's just going to be a no-go.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's my outside opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a question for Diane.
Go ahead.
If somebody wants to work on the laws for their state, when they come to you, is there any cost for your service?
No. Our organization is a nonprofit organization. We have two organizations, the National Health Freedom Coalition, and the Coalition is an organization that teaches about health freedom and educates people about the political process. And the National Health Freedom Action Organization is our lobbying organization. And I work part-time for each of those. And we have another staff attorney that works part-time for each of those, Ann Gillum. And then we have support staff, a couple support staff. And we function on donations. So our people give donations to our organizations, and then we provide our services and education for free to whoever calls us.
Okay. The second question is on the healthfreedom.org website. For those 11 states or 9 states you mentioned where homeopaths can practice under the Health Freedom Act, are those laws, at least for those 9 states, are kind of provided there or no?
Are they what?
Are those, let's say for California, the information about all the things required by, non-licensed practitioner, is it available there or we have to go to individual states' law books?
On our website, we have the law that passed in that state. It's on the NHFC website, and it's in the Information Center, and there's a list of the laws, and if you click on the law, you can actually read the health freedom law.
Okay. And Eric, I have one question for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. As far as homeopathic prescription drug, is it, you are part of pharmacopoeia, so is it decided by the federal or that also on statewide basis?
I think your question is whether or not the designation that something is an OTC or a prescription attenuation, is that a state-by-state decision or a national decision on a federal basis?
Yes.
Okay, so the first thing that I described was the homeopathic pharmacopoeia looking at safety issues and doing calculations based upon toxicological data, and the Federal Food Drug Administration, that regulatory entity looks to the homeopathic pharmacopoeia as being the experts in that kind of information. So the answer is, from that point of view, that's a nationally wide restriction. The other thing I described, which was what a company decides to put on their label, is going to be company by company, their choice, but as soon as they sell it, and this is a little bit more complicated than Diane indicated, as soon as they sell it and it crosses state lines, then it is part of interstate commerce and it's a federal national issue. It's a bit more complicated than Diane described because the Interstate Commerce Act also allows the federal government to say if any component of a product, and it doesn't matter what the product is, whether the product is a car, whether the product is a drug, or whether the product is a book, if any part of that crossed state lines, then the final product is subject to the Interstate Commerce Act. which means basically everything that's sold in the United States, unless you get it from your local farmer's market, is going to be under the jurisdiction of the federal government. So it's a bit more complex than that. They can push the interpretation of what's interstate to include everything in the product on a single ingredient basis.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
I have a question. Hello, I have a question for Diane. How do you find out what is the state of, you know, what action it has been taken towards getting the safe harbor law in a state that does not have safe harbor yet?
Well, we're happy to, if you contact us, we will let you know what we know about any efforts, and sometimes we are not aware of efforts. For example, in the state of Hawaii this past year, we had a bill that went into the state of Hawaii 4 years ago with a legislator that was interested, and we gave her that, and also the Hawaii homeopath that was shut down helped get it introduced, but it did not get into a hearing, so we did not have an active group there. And then when we were doing our research this year, we were able to find that another person had gone to Hawaii and given language to their legislator and introduced a bill this year, and they had literally just taken the California bill and had it revised for Hawaii and introduced it. We tried to find out who that was. I don't know if Anne is on the line, but I don't know if we've found the person that put it in, but we have talked to the legislator and the legislator's aides. So you're happy to call us. We'll tell you what we know, but we don't know everything. So,
fantastic. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Where do we find your contact information? On your website?
Yes. Our website is nationalhealthfreedom.org. And also, I'll give you my cell phone number and my email. My cell phone is 651-470-7367. I'll say that again, 651-470-7367. And my email is the word similars. Can't imagine. At AOL.com. Similars@AOL.com. Yeah, and I think if you were happy to research things for people or give further explanations. It's been a while since I did some research on the federal product issues 10 years ago when I went to the AIH medical doctor conferences, but I'm glad that Eric was on the call tonight. Thank you, Eric, because I haven't been involved in the pharmacopeia issues for a long time, and that's an element that I think as the profession evolves and becomes so much a part of the culture, there will be a greater need to explore fine-tuning in that area. So, thanks for having me on the call tonight. I really appreciate it. Being able to talk about this issue, and I hope that all homeopaths can practice in the United States. I just really value the services that you're providing, and I hope your schools start blossoming, and I hope that the regular medical community, that there's creative ways to find through business associations and community services, ways to incorporate homeopathy into the healing culture.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for taking your time. I know you're really busy with a lot of different issues. So,
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. And we'll have it, if it's successful, we'll have it on our web, up and on our website for all members.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm just wondering if now.